number 67. Welcome to These Fantastic Worlds, the science fiction and fantasy podcast by Jake Jackson. This week's story is the beginning of a two-parter. It's an intriguing mix of ancient civilizations and space travel, hidden treasures and secret messages. It's called Relic. It is 3045 in the common era on Earth, in the protectorate of Ethiopia. I blink back my tears as I speed away from my father and my life in Aksum, heading for the spaceport in nearby Djibouti. I cannot allow my regrets to overwhelm me, for the discoveries I have made have awakened something within me. My father understands and has given me his blessing, but I can still see the pain in his face at the departure of his only daughter. I remember the last conversation as I accelerate the hover car across the desert. Father, this relic, I can feel it in my bones. It calls to me. I found it, and now I must do as it commands. I sought my father's eyes as he rearranged the ancient pots and carvings under the shade of his market stall. Kia, my dearest, you've always been an independent soul. I remember watching you with the other children in the street. You would not do what everyone else wanted, unless it was on your own terms. He stopped and raised his hands. These gnarled fingers have waved you inside so many times to rescue you from yourself. He sighed. I know I was harsh when you were young, but with your mother gone, I was worried about you. Oh, Father, I don't think about those times in that way. You taught me so much while I sat on this stool, when I could have been outside, wasting my time in the sun with the others. I laughed, ruefully perhaps. But he really had rescued me. Most of my fellows on the street had disappeared, been killed in somebody else's war, and yet I had survived, educated by my father. Then when the universities opened again, I studied archaeology. My life is so rich with knowledge, I know I'm most fortunate. I do not have regrets. I leaned across the pots and hugged him. This man I knew I would never see again, born Chinua, blessing of God, was indeed a blessing to me. I thought back a little further to the day when I found the relic. The university team had been assigned a sector of the dig in the most ancient part of Aksum and discovered chambers hidden under a stela that had been uncovered years earlier. All the excitement of the Rift Valley, the unearthing of the skeletons over 3 million years old, our little ancient treasures were ignored. But we found clay tablets and traces of myrrh, a treasure trove that astonished our professor Tasifa, who had spent a lifetime searching in vain for evidence of the first civilizations in this region. But one discovery, a small skull, with what seemed to be clumsy graffiti across its forehead, was ignored by the rest of the team. At the time, I thought it was because the other finds would yield further secrets more easily. But on reflection, I realized that every time I showed the skull, none of the others would respond, as though both it and I were invisible. When I placed the skull on the ground, they spoke to me again. Professor, there's so much here, we should call in the ministry to codify. Oh, indeed, but let's record as much as we can in the meantime. The head of our team had been my undergraduate tutor, so I was familiar with his crooked smile and occasionally crooked ways. I picked up the skull again. But what about this? I tried to hold his attention, but he drifted away to the other side of the chamber to study another find by one of the students, who had hailed him over. I held up the skull. Professor, look! He ignored me. In fact, the others did too, as long as I held the skull. I returned each day for a week and tried to interest the professor, but each day his attention was drawn away, and I began to be reminded of those days when my father called me in because he saw the path of my solitude. So I took the skull from the chamber, sat on a boulder outside the dig, and studied the relic in the harsh daylight. I turned it over and explored a hole in the back, shining my torch inside to find more of the strange markings inside the cranium. They looked a little like the cuneiform of ancient Sumer, but with simple numbers too. As I stared, I felt a curious sensation, as though the sounds around me had been deadened, sucked away. I tried to study the form of the incomprehensible markings and felt myself sliding towards them, an irresistible pull that brought no understanding but an overwhelming sense of otherness. I concentrated so hard With the sun searing at my own head, I fell from the boulder and knocked myself out. When I woke, curiously, I found myself on the dusty street floor of the market, close to my father's home, several kilometres from the dig. I felt the pain of the fall on my left shoulder, but my right hand had kept the relic aloft, so I scrambled up, buried the curious skull deep in my rucksack, and took it home. The days that followed at the dig had become hollow, and soon I became disillusioned with the obsessions of Professor Tasifa's team, who seemed to me to be distracted by artifacts of lesser importance. Each night I returned home to stare at the skull, sometimes spending every dark hour so absorbed in its markings and shapes that soon I stopped going to the archaeological site and began researching the marks. Within days, I found myself studying survey maps of stars, of planet formations, continental shapes on planets in distant corners of the galaxy, and eventually, one particular planet in the system of Wolf 359, once thought to be uninhabitable, but now calculated to have oxygen in its thin atmosphere. The more I saw, the more fascinated I became, obsessed with the need to identify the meaning of the markings and the skull, both of which seemed to be so much older than anything we could find in Axum. I was convinced that I had to see that planet for myself, and checked the interplanetary schedules to find a passage to the space station nearest Wolf 359. I found I could discuss the findings with my father as long as I didn't refer to the skull itself. "Father, some of the markings we found in the dig, they're similar to something I've found off-planet." I was hesitant, because he came from a time when spaceships and rockets were threats, not simple means of transport. "I see, my child." He looked up. He knew his daughter well enough to understand her strong sense of purpose. "Yes, well, I'm not a child anymore. I've made my mind up. I have my own path now." "Indeed, I have seen it find its way to you." He smiled with that pained expression of a parent of a lost child now coping with the adult in front of him. "So I must leave for Djibouti and take the next flight to Wolf 359. The second planet. It's drawing me to it. Will you give me your blessing?" I suppose I wouldn't have asked if I thought he would not give it. "Of course," he smiled once more, as if it would make any difference. He hugged me, and as I placed my arms around him, I felt the rucksack that contained the skull lift a little. So, in the hired hovercar, I sped away, and soon I will see the gleaming rockets of Djibouti rising up ahead, beckoning me to the stars. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Next time we'll find out what happens to Kia and the mysterious skull as they journey to the outer reaches of space and try to resolve the mystery of their existence. This is Jake Jackson. See you next time. Goodbye.